Coming up on Golf Today, sweet victory for Willie Z after a bushel of close calls and runner-up finishes. Will Zalatoris finally gets PGA Tour win number one in style in the playoffs. As Marcellus Wallace once said in Pulp Fiction, what now? And Smith, red lines, and videotape. What to make of the two-shot penalty given to Cam Smith one day after the infraction at the FedEx St. Jude Championship? The right call or a day too late? We debate. And tears, tattoos, and triumph. We meet 25 new PGA Tour members who clinched their cards yesterday. It's a happy, happy, joy, joy Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
It is official. Will Zalatoris is now a PGA Tour winner. The victory coming in his 56th tour start in his first FedEx Cup playoffs appearance. He's just the second player to win a FedEx Cup playoffs event in his first playoff appearance. Yeah, big time hug for Willie Z getting it done. Hope your Monday is off to a great start. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week Magazine. I tell you what, yesterday was a lot of fun to watch.
It really is, Damon. We're at this point in the season now where every week is the last chance saloon out there. And some guys are popping champagne, others are crying into their beer, and at least we get to sit back with some popcorn and watch it all. But Zalatoris, it really is, you know, we've been waiting for this train to arrive at the station for a long time. It looks like it's a pretty powerful locomotive that's pulling into the station now. It's pretty good to see.
Speaking of locomotives, if you've been uncomfortable with the last couple of weeks or months in the game of golf, seeing Tom Kim last week and Will Zalatoris yesterday, two young players embracing what it means to be a PGA Tour winner. It was beautiful this last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, if you're wondering whether or not the game is in good hands, at least the future of the game, future of the PGA Tour, if you even want to get more specific about it, these are two pretty good guys to have up top right now.
No doubt. Third member of our team today is Paige McKenzie. Paige, your thoughts on the weekend that was?
This is my favorite time of year, Damon. And part of it's obviously the FedEx Cup playoffs. Seeing Will Zalatoris win for the first time was, I think, incredibly satisfying. As watching him get those second place finishes and seeing him finally cross the finish line. But you also think about what happened on the LPGA Tour, which I know we'll get to in a minute. The fact that PGA Tour cards were handed out at Korn Ferry Tour Finals. I'm super excited about this time of year. It was a fun weekend.
It really was, Paige. Let's show the viewers the highlights from yesterday in Memphis. It was heart-stopping action. Final round. This is Zalatoris, the par 4 18. Some trouble with his driver yesterday. This was his third.
Yeah, and it was a buried lie, difficult to judge how the ball was going to come out. So, yeah, not a bad attempt, but you knew he was probably going to have to get up and down. Sepp Straka was behind him, and the putter wasn't always so solid for Will, but yes.
Remarkable. The moment, the man, par saver, 66. Now he has to wait for Sepp Straka, 22 feet for birdie at 18.
We had the opportunity here, had a couple good par saves in the hole previous to even be in this position and not quite able to get it done, so extra golf for us.
Off to a playoff handshake, hats come off for a moment, and it's time to get to business. So this is the second playoff hole. Zalatoris now tee shot. This is, he hammered it, but it's going a little too far to the right, Paige.
Well, and you mentioned it, you really did struggle with the driver at the end of regulation. Hit the first three fairways of the day, but after that only hit two fairways on his incoming 11, you know, fairway given holes. And then in the playoff, it wasn't much better. They're very much in trouble. So Sepp Straka now, door wide open, but he does have a tendency to miss a little to the left. And you know, there is a penalty area over there, but a fortunate soft bounce keeps it at least on grass.
So you're right, Paige. I thought as soon as Zalatoris' ball was well off the fairway that Sepp had an opportunity. Instead, he has to kind of pitch out to here. And this is his third shot. Well, he takes a drop, rather. This is his third shot.
Yeah, it was actually controversial that he took the drop rather than trying to hit it. He had taken his shoes off. But controversy ended there when, from 152 yards, nailed it to 6 feet. So now, Will Zalatoris, after chipping out, he only had 94 yards, has a little bit of pressure to try to get up and down because he knows Sepp's in close and dials it in pretty well.
Just look at his reaction, almost like expressionless. This is all about business for par from 13 feet. And now Sepp to match.
And again, he's been solid from the shorter distance coming down the stretch in regulation. A very incredible up and down from the hazard to extend this playoff. Now in this par three, it's starting to leak, Damon, and I was getting pretty nervous.
Oh, ball bouncing, dancing on the rock wall there. Somehow stays dry. And once again, the door is open for Sepp to say, this is over.
This was what was incredible, is watching this start to leak, thinking, you have all the room in the world to the left. And he ends up wet. And this is where Dan Hicks, our friend, had maybe the best call of the day and says, what's going to happen now?
All right, so he takes the drop. This is his third from the drop zone.
And this was a pretty big mistake to not put himself in at least better position to be able to put a putt on it, not knowing exactly what Will was facing standing on the rock. And Will, with a conservative decision here, there was some question of how that ball was going to come out, so decides to take the drop, keeps the ball in his hands, in that he has control over how it's going to react. And what does he do? He sticks it.
Oh, great shot.
Really,
so much talk about it. Is his putting, but the wedge has been a big part of the improvement as well. Now this for Bogey Page in the win.
Huge. Huge. And you mentioned it, Damon. I think that the putting story was a big part of, you know, the thread of his professional career, and to have actually his ball striking let him down on that Sunday. And the putter is what kept him in it and ultimately won in the golf tournament.
With his fiance. New caddy on the bag, by the way, the new designation, that of a PGA Tour win. Take a look inside the numbers. He's long off the tee, as he often is. Strokes gain numbers, first in tee to green and approach, tied for first in strokes gain total, 25th in strokes gain putting. Let's hear from a very thankful champ.
I think anytime you put yourself in contention, you're gonna learn something about yourself. And you know, the first second that I had at the Masters was life-changing, because it put me in position, you know, to play out here as much as I wanted to, and put me kind of on the map. The second at the PGA was kind of affirmation that it wasn't a fluke of a week. And then the third one at the US Open gave me that much more belief that I can win a major, or I can win, you know, win out here. And it was just a matter of time. And obviously, this was my week. It still hasn't hit yet. I think I've always had the attitude of the job's not done, and as great as it is to pull this off, I still feel like I've got some unfinished business going forward. And so it's obviously very satisfying, but you know, this is the peak season for us, obviously, for the PGA Tour players, and you know, the grind continues.
Can't say we couldn't see this player coming, and now there he is atop the FedEx Cup playoffs and eligibility points list after that victory in Germantown, Tennessee, just outside of Memphis, number one in the FedEx Cup standings. And listen, this transcended golf. Adam Sandler say, hey, congrats, Will. I'm happy for you. Happy's happy for you. Enjoy it all. Of course, there's the meme going around. Will Zalatoris looking a little bit like Happy Gilmore's caddy, that young redhead who was carrying the bag. So yeah, even Adam Sandler paying attention. And Eamon, I must say, it's been so fun to watch the journey of this player. It's been rapid. You know, he could have won a sleeve of major championships by now. And I remember speaking to Josh Gregory, his coach, who's going to join us next hour, who said that, listen, we knew that the putting was an area he had to address, and he needed to have those confidence-building moments, those memory bankers. So he made some big putts in the match play against Kevin Na and Victor Hovland. And then you get to that PGA Championship in May, mm-hmm. Southern Hills, 72nd hole, par putt, trying to get into a playoff eventually with Justin Thomas. And he rolls it right in the reaction. And you say, wait, what's wrong with his putting? That looked clutch to me, as did the reaction. Loses that playoff, but gains in confidence. And then yesterday, 72nd hole for par in Memphis. Reaction. What are they going to say now? Barring the line from one of his sporting heroes.
It sounded like when you made the putt on the 72nd hole, you said, what are they going to say now? It's obviously probably a very instinctual and kind of emotional moment. Why do you think that's what came out in that moment?
Yeah, I did say that. Yeah, you know, I'm a big Warriors fan, and obviously Steph, he's a Cal Club guy. He's a pretty big inspiration, obviously. I follow the Warriors like crazy, and when he said that, it kind of related to kind of my journey so far. And so being that close and then kind of being written off here and there, and then obviously finally pulling off, it was I actually can't believe I said that, actually. At least it wasn't something worse. But, yeah.
But, yeah, indeed. He knew what people were saying about him and his putting stroke. I tell you what, Josh Gregory said they put in hours and hours amping up the pressure, trying to simulate tournament golf as best they could for moments like yesterday.
And it really does show you how much that narrative had been weighing on Will Zalatoris, even though he gave no outward sign of it over the last couple of years. But it's not just that Will Zalatoris was coming close. Will Zalatoris was coming close on the biggest stages in this game. He was second to Hideki at the Masters in 21 by a single stroke. Lost a playoff this year at the PGA Championship to Justin Thomas. Second to Matt Fitzpatrick at the US Open by a single stroke. Everything else about his game is good enough to put him right in the mix. The putting is what has gotten most of the attention. And it's a little unfair when you look at here at his more recent statistics here. Going back over the last half dozen events, there are no strokes gained statistics, obviously, for the Open Championship, so we left that out. But you can see at his worst putting week here was 54th at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Otherwise, there are four of those events where he's inside the top 30. That's a pretty consistent performance. He's 103rd on tour in strokes gained putting, but that's something of a misleading statistic in its own way, because you don't really have to be that far off on the PGA Tour. If you look at putting inside of feet, inside of 10 feet, on that statistic on the PGA Tour, Will Zalatoris is 177th.
Right.
That would make you think he's a dreadful putter. He makes 86.69% of his putts inside of 10 feet. The leader on tour, Kelly Kraft, makes 91.04%. It's not a massive margin. And he's 21st in birdie average. So he makes his share of putts. But clearly the narrative had started to weigh. And maybe it's just because he's so exceptionally good at strokes gained approach that he gives himself more opportunities
than anyone else. That is definitely part of it.
But this is going to show now what confidence does in addition to the changes that he's clearly made with Josh Gregory that have led to this improvement in putting. Because it's noticeable over the last 4, 5, 6 months that the putting has gotten increasingly better, and the confidence and belief in what he's doing has gotten better as well.
And on the toughest golf courses that these players play. Paige, your thoughts on what you saw from Will Zalatoris this past week?
I agree with all of that, and I can't wait to hear from Josh, because I remember talking to Will's swing coach, Troy Denton, during the U.S. Open week, and he was giving Josh credit for a lot of the work that they'd done. So I look forward to that. But one of the things that stood out to me was just, you mentioned it, Damon, there was a caddy change. And I don't find it that coincidental that the following week that he got a little bit of a bounce. And that often happens for players, and that means no disrespect for his previous caddy. But I also think in this situation, that little bounce, yes, that was emotional, but they also had to work together and through some difficult moments at the end of regulation in the playoffs where he found himself in a little bit of trouble. This on the playoff, the second playoff hole, where he missed the fairway again and found that cart path. When you think about how Will won yesterday, I mentioned before, he didn't hit very many fairways. Starting at the fourth hole to the finish, he only hit two fairways. He hit the 10th fairway and he hit the 16th fairway, but the 16th fairway, he hit a tree and it bounced back in. So there was a lot of tension, but in those moments, they work together to figure out to chip it out rather than get too aggressive from the pine straw. And then in this moment too, where there was a decision to be made once the ball landed on the rock. And this is where new partnerships are tested. This is where you've got to learn to be able to read each other, and for a caddy to be able to read a player and realize, how much do you say? What do you say? How aggressive is he as a player? Where does it fit in his personality on the golf course to make a drop rather than to try for it? And I think the two decisions, the pine straw decision on the previous playoff hole, the second playoff hole, and then the decision to go back to the drop area, was incredibly important. And I think considering that this is a new partnership that they'd only just begun this week, I thought, to me, that stood out, that in those moments that they were able to have those clear-headed conversations and Will was able to make the decisions that were best for him in advancing, and both those decisions paid off in how he was able to par save and then ultimately bogey save to win the golf tournament.
Love that, Paige. Felt like a partnership that had been around for some 10 years as opposed to 10 minutes between these two.
But wouldn't it be so much fun to have Will go back out there after the trophy ceremony and hit the shot from the rocks just to see
what would
that might actually have turned out?
I wouldn't have put it past him to pull
something off.
Because
that was the great will-he-won't-he moment there, because it really looked as though he was going to take on that shot.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be, from the luxury of the couch, it seemed to be a very low percentage play.
I wouldn't have wanted to hit that shot. Would you?
You would have. That's why he's a winner, and that's why we're not.
One of a zillion differences between us and Will Zalatoris. What a Sunday that it was in Memphis, Tennessee. You see Lucas Glover made a huge move in the FedEx Cup standings. Will Zalatoris, now a PGA Tour winner after all those close calls, gets it done in his 56th PGA Tour star.
Well, Sunday was a busy day for the tinfoil hats on Twitter, and the world number two, Cameron Smith, was at the center of their conspiracy theories. After the break, we've got more on Smith's two-stroke penalty that caused such a kerfuffle.
Back on Golf Today, news on this Monday. Cameron Smith, who is currently number three in the FedEx Cup standings, has withdrawn from the BMW Championship in Delaware. According to his agent, Cam has been, quote, dealing with some on and off hip discomfort for several months and thought it best to rest this week in pursuit of the FedEx Cup, end quote. You recall Saturday, Cameron Smith put himself in a great position entering the final round of the FedEx St. Jude Championship. You see what the leaderboard looked like at the conclusion of play on Saturday. Smith was just two shots off the lead held by J.J. Spahn, and with a win, could have climbed to number one in the world. But before his final round, Smith was informed by PGA Tour rules officials that he would move to 9-under in four shots back after it was determined he violated Rule 14.7. Officials discovered the violation after reviewing footage from round three of Smith's drop at the fourth hole, that little par three. The footage shows Smith dropping and playing his next shot from the hazard line, which is a violation of Rule 17.1 when the ball is in the penalty area, turning his bogey four into a six. And afterwards, Gary Young, PGA Tour rules official, spoke to Rex Hager.
Gary, when did the PGA Tour become aware of the violation?
We became aware of the violation actually just this morning. We had seen something during yesterday's broadcast that looked a little bit awkward, where it looked as though Cam may have played a ball awfully close to the penalty area line. But at that time, we were comfortable that the player has pretty good knowledge of the rules and he was operating properly. It came to the committee's attention from another person on the committee that had seen it overnight and brought it to our attention this morning, thought it was worth further discussion and exploration. We took another look at it, and at that point we determined it was close enough to the line to have the conversation with Cam when he arrived today at the golf course.
Can you walk us through the timeline of when you told Cam and what his reaction was?
Yeah, I would say it was probably at about 11:20 this morning. It was the first time I'd seen him in the clubhouse. He was alone, which was a perfect opportunity just to ask him to come into the rules office. I had a conversation with him. I told him about hole number four during round three and just wanted his view of things. And I wanted to make sure that he was comfortable that his golf ball was completely off the penalty area line after he had taken relief. At that point, he told me, no, it was actually on the line. So I had just explained to him that the rule itself does not allow the ball to be touching the penalty area after taking relief from the penalty area. So at that point, it was just simply informing him of the two-stroke penalty. It was not a serious breach of the rules, and he just gets the two strokes applied to that hole for round three.
What was his reaction to that news?
He stayed calm throughout. He wanted to do the right thing, and his parting words to me are the rules of the rules. And just a complete gentleman, he accepted the two-stroke penalty and went out like it was any other day of business for him.
Well, many weighed in on social media, as you can imagine, including Thomas Bjorn, victorious 2018 European Ryder Cup captain. Once a round is finished, there should only be disqualification available for deliberate rules infringements. The Cam Smith situation was not deliberate, and therefore he shouldn't be penalized. Retrospectively, I'm probably wrong in this opinion. Not the first time. The words of a 15-time winner on the DP World Tour. Paige McKenzie, you're aware of this situation. Did it sit well with you, or do you have a problem with the overnight and then morning two-shot penalty?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually more in Thomas Bjorn's camp on this one. But I will say it's reasonable to understand that Cam Smith may have been confused on this rule when you consider that if you're on the line in a penalty area, it is in the penalty area. If you're on the line in an out-of-bounds situation, you're actually in bounds. As long as any part of the golf ball is touching the course of play. So it's understandable that he would have not totally understood the rule, but I agree with the PGA Tour official saying we just assumed he knew. We just assumed he knew. Why would he not know? Everybody knows once you take relief, you must take complete relief, and he actually put himself back in the penalty area. But back to the actual question, which is retroactively giving the penalty, I actually thought we were going to be done with this because video call-ins were outlawed effectively in 2018. Viewers were not allowed to call in, and then I figured at that point we wouldn't be seeing penalties happen after scorecards were signed. But obviously this was not a call-in. It was an official that saw it after the fact, or maybe saw it during, but again, assumed that he knew the rule. So it doesn't sit well with me because I think the burden is on those players that are on camera. And I think it's a higher standard for those players, and I think it's within the group that you should be policing each other in situations like that. And if it's not caught, golf is not black and white. As much as we hope that the rules are always black and white, things like this happen. And things like this happen on holes that are not on camera. And it happens to other players. So that's why I struggle with it.
Yeah, that was the USGA decision, the so-called Lexi rule, following the four-shot penalty she was assessed during the Chevron Championship. Your thoughts on this? Because I have a trouble with the overnightness of this, that if the officials watched the video, which they did, and said, well, it's close enough, or that Cam, you know, he would know the rule, then the decision is made. My problem with it is not the rule specifically, but the timing of announcing the penalty. I feel like if you saw it and watched it, if you see it again on Saturday night and wait till Sunday to tell them, that's where I have a problem with it, Eamon.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Damon. I think the penalty itself, it's fine, and we would also differ with Thomas Bjorn's point a little bit. Is sure, it's one thing to go back and look at something that was intentional. There's a very grey area. Did he gain any advantage from the unintentional infraction? In this case, the answer to that is no. And I'm very much with you on the timing. I mean, it was almost 20 hours passed between him leaving the golf course yesterday on Saturday and then coming back on Sunday. And to me, this kind of goes to the heart of a long-standing PGA Tour culture, and there's two things that Tour really doesn't do very well, which is move fast and be very transparent. Tom, he was the betting favourite Saturday night, a heavy betting favourite when he left the golf course, and was still so on Sunday morning as he's there being told that he's going to add two strokes to his score. And if you're going to exist in the new environment that we live in with sports, and the Tour has multiple sports betting partners,
correct,
then information and transparency and the speed with which you deliver that information, particularly on stuff like this, I think is pretty important. And it also bears pointing out that the Tour got extraordinarily lucky that this happened in the third round and not the second round, because what happens if his score sent somebody home on Friday who literally ended their season in the first playoff event, and they fly home, and suddenly the following morning the Tour saying, well, you got to fly back because the cut line moved because Cam Smith's two strokes worse off. You can't have situations like this that are left to fester and marinate overnight. And it really comes back to this idea of, where do you draw the line in golf tournaments? Is it a four-day event, or do you draw the line after each round when a certain appropriate period of time has passed? You can't go back and start to litigate stuff. You know, if a guy's pitching a perfect game in the ninth inning, you can't go back and start to litigate a call in the first
balls
or second inning.
Correct. I agree. The timing of it is
the
problem. I get
the seriousness of the infraction, yes, obviously has bearing on this. But at a certain point, you've got to be able to draw a line under a round of golf and not have the impact on it kind of stray into the next day, especially when it's a relatively minor, unintentional infraction like this. But it just can't be allowed to go on. The tour needs to be more transparent, and they need to move faster.
Yeah, and part of that decision also was allowed for intent and reasonable doubt. And also, you mentioned Friday. What if it was Sunday and it happened? You know, the broadcast, it was shown again on Sunday night as well, not just on Saturday night. So what happens then? On a Monday? If the trophy's been handed out, what if Cam Smith had won the tournament, for crying out loud?
I think the tour's historical attitude has been, and every tour is pretty much the same, when the trophy's handed out, the checks are cashed, we move on, the tournament is over. Some part of that mentality needs to exist round to round. If it's not a deliberate infraction, if it's no advantage gained, then at a certain point there has to be a statute of limitations where we draw a line under that round and we move on.
End of, what is it, EOD, end of business, end of the day, Paige? What do you think?
I think we're all hoping, or I think golf officials hope for objectivity all the time. And unfortunately, there's subjectivity in everything. And to answer your question, Damon, that's the difference in the Sunday, is once the completion of the competition is over, it is done. You cannot litigate it again. The competition is over. And I've often wondered whether you can do that each and every round, whether once all the scorecards are in, you complete the day, and then we move forward. It, I think, gets a little bit shaky when you have weather delays and things that may not have completed the round per each 24-hour cycle. But I've often wondered if that's not the solution, is treat every day like we do Sunday, where it is done and we move forward.
Well said, Paige. Also notable, I thought Cam Smith did not address the media after his round on Sunday. And as we mentioned at the top, he's withdrawn from this week's BMW Championship. Some of the other action we saw around the globe this weekend, DP World Tour. Scotland's Ewan Ferguson went wire-to-wire at the ISPS Panda World Invitational, his second DP World Tour title of the season. You know, Scottish fans looking for the next great hope, the next Monty, and Ewan able to get it done at the ISPS. Went wire-to-wire. Rocking in, great moment, playing well this season. Put your hands in the air, wave like you just don't care. Take a look at this leaderboard, a three-shot victory, final round 69, able to get it done. Started the week with a 61 at Galgram Castle and closed Sunday at the same venue with that 69 to finish three clear of the field. All right, Paige McKenzie, how about the ladies' side? Maya Stark, par 3, 12th. Man, she was on fire.
Yeah, 6-under through the first nine holes. Par 10 and 11, you're thinking maybe she cooled off a little bit. But after another tremendous approach shot, not much more than a kick-in for another birdie.
Yeah, wedges were working, and the putter as well here at 13.
And that was the thing. It felt like, yes, it was going to be her day, but she was striking it so well, and then all of a sudden the putter hit lit fire with that birdie on 13, and then this, an additional bonus on 17. Even she looked a little surprised on that one.
Just love seeing the player really in the zone, in the bubble. Now she's putting for par on 18. Had a little trouble off the tee, didn't matter. 20 under, wins the tournament. A 10 under 63 on the day. And yes, welcome to the LPGA Tour. Maya Stark, her third win on the LET this season. Let's hear from the champ.
I don't think it's landed yet. I've just been so nervous, I think, all day, and just kind of reminding myself to be calm and just, just taking one shot at a time. But it's been easier said than done.
This is a tri-sanctioned event. This also means that you become a first-time winner on the LPGA Tour. This also gives you an opportunity to accept membership. What does that mean to you?
It means the world. That was all I came here for. Like, I just wanted that winner's category, and I was just so nervous, and I hate qualifying, so now it's great that I don't have to do that again.
And when you were younger, you said, "I am Tiger Woods," and now, do you think that will change to "I am Maya Stark"?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, after last week, my coaches just said, "Don't try to be Tiger Woods, try to be you," and I hope that I did that.
I am Maya Stark. How about that, Paige? Let's focus in on the outstanding performance by Maya, 22 years of age. What can you tell us about her journey to this point?
I feel fortunate to have kind of seen this coming. I was on the call back in 2020 at the U.S. Open when she was one of three Swedish amateurs to kind of stand out at the U.S. Open in Houston. It was Ingrid Lidblad, who also had a great U.S. Open, Lynn Grant, and Maya Stark, who performed beautifully. She was the lowest of the three at that U.S. Open, ended up with a top 15 finish. And you got a chance to see there might be something there to be at the biggest stage in playing against the best players in the world and to stand up head-to-head and not be afraid in those moments. And this was her second, one of the shots from her second round, which absolutely was a highlight, I'm sure, for her and her career. And then I got a chance to follow her in collegiate golf. You mentioned if she played at Oklahoma State, and in 2021, in May of 2021, she was part of that team that ended up in the finals. Ole Miss ultimately won, but she was one of the stars for Oklahoma State in that finals. And after just a sophomore season at Oklahoma State, she ended up turning pro, and she turned pro in August of 2021. And 2 weeks after that, she won a Ladies European Tour Access event, won two events on the Ladies European to get her status for this season. And this season's been extraordinary. 14 events, nine of those top 10s, lowest stroke average, and three wins on the Ladies European Tour, and obviously this win, which was also co-sanctioned with the LPGA Tour. So there was a very sharp trajectory as soon as she turned pro. Like I said, she won that LET Access event, which is the lower tour, 2 weeks after she turned pro, then won an LET event 2 weeks after that, and another LET event 2 weeks after that. So she was sixth on the money list after only six events her first year of turning pro, and then this season has been continued that monster trajectory. And I enjoy watching her play, Damon. It was just a pleasure this weekend.
She's really announced herself in such a fast fashion out there, Paige. When you look at her talent, you've been watching her, as you said, for a long time. Is there anything that separates Maya Stark from either established players on the tour or other young talents that we see coming up?
I think for those people that have not yet seen her play, one of the things that will stand out is her tempo and her pace. A lot of LPGA players, and I would say this is such a compliment to the LPGA Tour, is some of the top players have the most beautiful, rhythmic, slow, tempoed, nice, smooth transition swings. But for Maya Stark, it's just a little quicker. And for me, it's really fun to see an explosive player that can control it. She's a very well-balanced golf swing, even with the quick tempo. You think of a Charlie Hull, that's probably the only female that I can think on the LPGA Tour that has that kind of same quick tempo both back and through, but hers has a little bit more violence to it. Maya Stark is just very in balance and a very smooth, quick swing. So something to pay attention to as we continue to watch her, and I'm sure we're likely to see her quite a bit on the LPGA Tour moving forward.
Paige, that's great info on Maya. What can you tell us about her caddy on the bag this week, Sophie Gustafson? I remember her as a player, Solheim Cupper.
Right, eight-time Solheim Cupper. In fact, she's sixth all-time on the Ladies European Tour win list. She also has five LPGA Tour wins. And yes, she caddied for Maya Stark this last week. We've seen her caddy before. She retired in 2015, and she actually jumped on the bag for American Beth Allen in 2016 and helped Beth Allen win the Order of Merit title that year, kind of out of nowhere. We also saw Sophie Gustafsson at the U.S. Open this year on the bag of Ingrid Lindblad, the Swedish amateur that had a standout tournament at the U.S. Open. And then we see her pop up and caddy for Maya Stark this week when wins on the LPGA Tour. So I know Sophie Gustafsson's not looking for a second full-time career, but she certainly has made an impact on those times that she did pick up the bag for some pretty talented players.
No doubt, another young star to add to the mix. Great stuff from Paige McKenzie. Right now, folks, get an update on the Epson Tour. That's the road to the LPGA. Yan Liu wins in a playoff to take home the title at the Four Winds Invitational for her first career victory. She's the ninth first-time winner on the Epson Tour career in 2022. Liu started playing golf at the age of 11. Fantastic young player.
No one left Memphis feeling quite as good as Will Zalatoris. His swing coach, Josh Gregory, is here to tell us about the work they've been doing to turn the prodigy into a champion. Some guys finished behind Zalatoris, but still earned a little confidence for the last two FedEx Cup playoff events. Others are running on fumes as they head to the BMW Championship. We'll discuss who's who. And the official World Golf Ranking has unveiled the biggest overhaul in its 36-year history. The chairman of the rankings, Peter Dawson, is here to explain the news behind the numbers. The Hour 2 of Golf Today gets underway right now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Another hour of Golf Today, Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. I ask you a simple question. Are you getting what you want from the FedEx Cup playoffs?
Anyone who didn't get what they want yesterday in watching the drama where, you know, you've got golf balls pinballing around the rocks.
So
you know, if you're not getting what you want out of that, then you're probably following the wrong sport at this point. Plus, and that's before you even get to the feel-good stories of the 25 guys earning cards out of the Corn Ferry Tour or the Maya Stark kind of sprint into the LPGA Tour so
Saki
early
Baba.
In her career. Exactly, one of the most dominating performances we've ever seen in the US Women's Amateur. These are good times in terms of what golf fans are being served up, regardless of all of the conflict that we're seeing around the game and the occasional lawsuits being filed.
Yeah.
The actual entertainment that fans are being served up, I think, is pretty good. Yesterday was a pretty high watermark.
I think so. The golf is good. You know, seeing Will Zalatoris, who's been oh so close, Sepp Straka coming off of six straight missed cuts, to be in that position, to have a chance to win. I mean, that's what you want, a little drama on the weekend.
Especially when you're talking about one of the rising stars who just hadn't quite delivered what was expected of him. I mean, he'd gotten to 14 in the world rankings. And that if you have done that without winning, it comes with a lot of kind of sniping in a way that you don't necessarily deserve to be up there that high. He did deserve to be up as high as he was, and now he's actually got that W beside his name on tour as well.
And it's 56 starts. So, folks, time now for Winning Moments, presented by Win Grips. Let's take you back through that epic playoff, FedEx St. Jude Championship. This is the third extra hole. Zalatoris decided not to play his shot from the rocks. This is the drop zone, third shot. Absolute peach. And the crowd, even they were firmly, squarely behind him, just for bogeying the win.
Yeah, they wanted to see the great hero, the young hero of American golf, deliver. And that's exactly what he did.
Absolutely. Great moment and definitely joy, but also relief. Not having to answer the question anymore. When are you going to win? You've been close. Are you building scar tissue? None of that anymore. This young man who celebrates his 26th birthday tomorrow. How about his shifting odds throughout the FedEx St. Jude Championship, courtesy of our friends at PointsBet. Pre-tournament plus 2,000, entering the final round plus 300, and minus 125, entering the playoff. And then you see the different time codes there, 6, 10, 30, and 50. And the odds continued to shift. And afterwards, Will caught up with our Rex Hager.
Will, your 56th PGA Tour start, your first PGA Tour victory. Want to get into the playoff, but what are your emotions right now?
Relief. We've been so close. So, sorry. Sorry. yeah, I mean, obviously, pretty wild couple weeks for me. You know, it's been a grind for a couple years now, and obviously to get this one's pretty cool.
Can you walk us back to the third playoff hole? What were your options on your second shot, and what did you decide to do ultimately?
Yeah, I thought that ball was in the water for sure. I got pretty lucky for it to barely land on land and bounce on the rocks a few times, and got into kind of a wedge in the rocks and the rough, and Joel talked me into going back, and obviously that paid off. But nice to, after being so close for so long, nice to finally see one like this pay off.
We asked you all week long about what you have learned this season about winning on the PGA Tour. What was the key that came through today?
Yeah, I mean, it's just being in contention a bunch. You can't replicate it in practice. Joel did a great job of keeping me laughing all day, made sure I wasn't walking too fast, controlled my breathing, and obviously for it to pay off is huge. Thanks.
A meaningful day for Will Zalatoris. So here's where things stand now as we look at the odds to win the FedEx Cup, courtesy of our buddies at PointsBet Sportsbook. Still Scotty Scheffler, the man to beat at plus 250, but Will moves all the way to plus 400. You see Rory in the mix. He's won a couple of FedEx Cup titles. Eamon, this is an interesting list.
It really is. I mean, there's a lot of quality guys who aren't even on that list of the top favorites. There are guys who we know are guaranteed a spot in the field at Eastlake for the Tour Championship. But that's a pretty impressive roster of guys right there.
See Cameron Smith at plus 1,200. In news on this Monday, Cam Smith, who is currently number three in the FedEx Cup standings, has withdrawn from the BMW Championship. According to his agent, Cam has been dealing with some on-and-off hip discomfort for several months and thought it best to rest this week in pursuit of the FedEx Cup. So maybe we will see him in Atlanta, Georgia. So time now for a little confidence meter, Eamon Lynch. Maybe who's kind of raised your confidence with what you've seen so far in the playoffs?
I was really impressed by Colin Morikawa over the weekend. He tied for fifth, and that was actually the first weekend action Colin Morikawa has seen in a couple of months since the US Open. He's only played twice since then, missed the cut at the Genesis Scottish Open and in the defence of his Open Championship title. And that Open victory was his last win on the PGA Tour. His last win anywhere was in Dubai on the DP World Tour last November. And that's a pretty noticeable slump for a guy who was playing as well as Colin Morikawa was, particularly through last year. He began this year at number two in the official World Golf rankings. He's currently at number eight. But there is one ranking that he's going in the right direction, and he entered the FedEx St. Jude Championship at 23rd on the FedEx Cup points list. Now he's up to 20th on that eligibility points list. So he's pretty much guaranteed that spot. At Eastlake, he's going to need a big week to really put himself into the mix to have a real shot at winning that third one.
And he's done this, you know, while not loving his iron game throughout a big chunk of the summer, and he talked about it at the US Open. I mean, he was in contention.
He's the only one who doesn't love his iron game, right? The rest of us would kill for it.
He just said, well, I'm not used to this shot shape that I'm seeing. I'm hitting these draws, you know, cut. And
he should try dealing with our shot shape, David.
That's a great point. Speaks to his talent that he can kind of stay in the mix, stay in contention, not being 100% comfortable with his game.
Who do you see as having at least made a case for themselves over the weekend that they're deserving of a little more belief than perhaps they had going into the week?
Well, Tom Kim, the train, is just...
You're going to ride that pony as far as it's going to take you, right?
I mean, you know, cash the check for the top 20, you know, well, that'll be tomorrow's show. But listen, this is a player. Look at his last three starts. I mean, 7th, 1st, and tied for 13th on golf courses that he'd never seen before. Detroit, Greensboro, and now Memphis. You know, you go from trying to get special temporary membership, then you do that, then you become a full-time member courtesy of your win at the Sedgefield Country Club at the Wyndham Championship. Just his joy, the way he can obviously adapt to golf courses that he's never seen, his optimism, very much like Victor Hovland in the way he goes about his business, thankful, gratitude. What a mighty 15th club that he has, not to mention not necessarily long off the tee, but exceedingly accurate with his irons, and a putter, Eamon, that just won't quit.
Well, it's nice when you're playing with house money at time of the year. And he's
now he can exhale, right?
House money, yeah. I mean, when I look at the guys who would give me, excuse me, some kind of concern.
Yeah, do you have someone that you're worried about?
I didn't see much that was all that positive out of Rory McIlroy this week. It was a missed cut, first one in quite a while for Rory. I mean, he only hit 11 of the 28 fairways he aimed at. He putted poorly on Thursday, a little bit better on Friday, but he moved from 6th down to 9th.
Yeah.
In the FedEx eligibility points list. It's just not a... It was rusty, and it looked very rusty. You know, he talked earlier in the week about how he'd taken a couple of weeks off over the last couple of weeks. He'd stayed in England, then came back to Florida for a week to try to knock that rust off. He didn't quite get there in time. He hadn't touched a club. He hadn't seen the inside of a gym. He hadn't eaten a vegetable in those 2 weeks.
I love that sound.
Only one of them was apparent last week, and he's probably going to be heading to the BMW Championship looking for a confidence boost as well. And you could throw Patrick Cantlay in there as well. He didn't drive it well. He didn't hit his irons well. He didn't putt well. Finished tied 57th, and he also fell a couple of spots down to 7th if we were talking about the guy trying to win back-to-back FedEx Cup. So there are some guys seeking a little bit of confidence out there that just isn't there at the moment.
Little hangover for Rory with the summer, with the Open, with the chance, the opportunity.
Based on what he said last week in his pre-tournament press conference, it didn't seem as though he was struggling to process what had happened, because at least Cam Smith came and won the tournament.
Yeah.
Rory shot 68 Sunday, needed to shoot probably 66 on Sunday. So I'm not sure if it's a hangover from St. Andrews, maybe a touch of that. I think it's more of a hangover of having taken a couple of weeks to remain in the UK out of the Florida heat for the summer, and now he's just trying to find his game back again. But who is it that you look at and say, this guy needs to show something and show something fast?
It's kind of similar to your... I mean, there are two guys who, when they miss cuts, it bothers me. Rory is one and Jordan Spieth is the other. And Jordan, of late, it's been feast or famine. Of his last four starts, he has two missed cuts and two top 10 finishes. And Jordan Spieth, you know, the putter has been the club that has been so cold. His ball striking numbers are actually pretty strong. You know, he's like 31st in strokes gained total. He's 157th in strokes gained putting. So that shot notwithstanding, the ball striking's not been the problem. When he misses cuts and goes home, typically it's because the putter is frigid. And for a player who, when he's on, the putter is Excalibur. I mean, it is magical. He's just been a little bit cold with that club. 157 in strokes gained putting.
But we had him on the show a couple of months ago, and he talked about the desire to get away from that hugely exaggerated swing practice routine that he's doing. And he's still doing that. And it was interesting, he was even getting swing advice on the range from Justin Thomas.
I saw that video,
Playing around with each other earlier in the week and, you know, showing videos, taking a little advice back and forth. He looks like a guy who, when the belief is there and the swing's backing up the belief, it's the same poetry that it was 6-7 years ago. When it's not there, he doesn't look as though he could kind of put pen to paper in terms of that. And it really is a Jekyll and Hyde thing he's got going on. That's typically not what stands you in good stead in the playoffs. Although, in fairness, you can easily, in Cam Smith's case, for example, he could miss the BMW and quite easily win at Eastlake as well. It doesn't eliminate you if you can be opportunistic and get hot at the right time. Jordan doesn't look as though he's particularly hot, but then again, neither was Sepp Straka.
And to continue your statement, I don't want Spieth to continue to put pen to paper. I like unscripted Jordan Spieth. I like the savant who is figuring out how to do it, not with a camera behind him or a cell phone or even his dear friend saying, yeah, you look a little steep up here. I like the Jordan Spieth who is playing, you know, by the seat of his pants. That's what 2015 was all about. It was feel. It was see the shot, whether it's from the tee or from the trees, and find a way to get the golf ball in the hole. And I think that guy we don't see enough of. I could be completely off my rocker. That's what I see when I'm out there.
Well, we've got another 25-year-old kid from Dallas who provides plenty of drama on Sunday afternoons out there on the PGA Tour. So if we don't have Jordan, at least we've got Will Zalatoris giving us a little
No doubt. And it's going to be a big week. It was last week in Memphis. We move on to Wilmington Country Club in Delaware. And not everyone. It's 70 players now, Eamon. We take a look at this eligibility points list. This FedEx Cup playoffs continue. Will Zalatoris, as you mentioned, the new number one in the FedEx Cup. Sungjae Im playing some fantastic golf of late. And this is 41 through 70, Wyndham Clark had to sweat it out, but he holds on to the new bubble position in these FedEx Cup playoffs.
We're coming up next. Will Zalatoris' swing coach is here, Josh Gregory. He's going to tell us what turned this prodigy into a PGA Tour champion. Stay with us.
Back on golf today. Yes, Will Zalatoris grabbed his first PGA Tour win yesterday at the FedEx St. Jude Championship just outside of Memphis, Tennessee. He beat Sepp Straka on the third playoff hole, rocketed up to number one in the FedEx Cup playoffs and eligibility points list, able to exhale at long last. And for years, been working with swing instructor Josh Gregory. Some fate in play last week as Gregory, who's a Memphis native, witnessed his star pupil grab that first tour win in his home city. Gregory, not only just a coach, but also a friend who has stepped into caddy, made that caddy switch last week at the Wyndham Championship. We welcome Josh to the program on this Monday. Josh, congratulations, first of all. You told me, you know, months ago of the hours, the games, the simulations, to get some confidence with that putter. What's it been like for you to see this journey reach a PGA Tour trophy?
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's been an amazing 3-year run to see the transformation from being well outside the top 1,000 in the world to now being number 9 in the world. To see him gain confidence, validation was yesterday, and it's been long overdue. But it all started. Look, obviously the guy's a way better putter than giving credit for. I mean, if they kept stats, based on all the majors this year, he'd be a top 50 putter on tour. So, it started at the right before the PGA Championship, and he's been on a nice heater since then. We really figured out some things and kind of defined his blueprint for what we needed to do to get better. And there's no better kid in this world or young man in this world. I mean, he's one of the best players in the world, but he's a first-class young man. And he sticks to the plan every single day, no matter if he shoots 65 or 75 or whether he's winning or missing the cut. We do the same things day in and day out that we've done for 3 years. And the only time we get in mistakes is when we over-try, when we overcomplicate things.
Josh, it must have been great to see the fruition of all of the work you put in over the years, but you weren't actually able to be out there and see that final putt right. Didn't your celebrations get a little bit too out of hand for the old man body when you were back in the clubhouse?
Yeah, I'm 47, and I need to realize that I don't jump as high as I used to. So when he made the putt on 8, I'm an emotional person. I know how much energy that he's put into it. I put into this, and he's like a son to me. And my fist pump was a little probably excessive, and I made a quick run to try to get up the hill to meet him on the putting green, thinking it would be a playoff. And unfortunately, my calf didn't really appreciate that. And it fortunately, it's just a severe strain, a slight tear, nothing crazy, but it's about as much pain as I've ever been in. So I need to stay away from these golf-related injuries. Fell out of a hotel bed about 2 years ago and now tearing my calf muscle. So I don't know. I got issues. But it was well worth it, I can promise you that.
And they say golf isn't a contact sport. We know better. Hey, Josh, I want to ask, first of all, feel better, and we wish you a speedy recovery. It's been interesting, this journey. You know, Josh, we saw yesterday Will kind of explode after that putt on the 72nd hole. You know, saying, you know, what are they going to say now, barring a quote from Steph Curry? How much was he bothered by the talk at tables like this or on the golf course or on Twitter about perceived weaknesses in his arsenal?
Bothered a little, motivated way more, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes, it hurts. Look, it hurts to get scrutinized for you know, about anything. And look, he said at Augusta this year, which is a beautiful comment, when people were asking about his putting stroke, and he goes, look, it may not look pretty, but I'll take anybody to putting green right now that wants to go. So the only thing that's going to continue to make his putting stroke better and better are moments like yesterday. Make the putt to the gun. Validate, he put in the hours to try to overcome this, to overcome, you know, the only, honestly, deficiency in his game. And he's an elite putter. You can't do what he's done the past 2 years and not be able to putt. But, yeah, that's what I told him last night. We got off the plane. I said, bud, I know you've been hurt. He never really lets on, but I said, I know this has bothered you to a certain extent. And it was a little vindication for him. It was a little I told you I can do this, and it may not look pretty, but it finds the hole quite often.
Josh, so much of the reaction to Will's victory has been this idea that it was long overdue, which you just said yourself, which on paper would seem remarkable for a guy who's only been on tour for a couple of years. How much danger is there with a guy like Will, where the expectations are so high, yet the competition is so tough, that if you don't win, you're somehow perceived as underachieving, when in fact he's had a pretty remarkable run for 2 years?
Well, I mean, you don't make, you know, $15 million or whatever, or 14 on the golf course, and have four or five second places and all the top tens and fives and majors and without being an elite player. He has an amazing perspective on things. He's never looked at any of these losses or playoff losses or second places as a failure. We have a simple quote, and it's a cliche. I know it sounds dumb, but it's true. We simply say, well, let's get a little bit better each day. When we try too hard, when we try to, you know, reinvent the wheel, is the only time he's ever struggled. And so he has such an amazing perspective and this amazing head on his shoulders, a great team around him, that it's a huge weight lifted off his shoulders to actually win and close the deal. But as he said, as long as I'm in contention, as long as I have a chance on Sundays, my career is going to be really good. And, you know, I hope there's no guarantees, but it wouldn't shock me to see what Scottie Scheffler did when he finally when he broke through. And it's hard to use the word finally when you've only been on the PGA Tour for 2 years. But it wouldn't shock me to see the floodgates open here soon. And as he told me after the PGA loss, when he lost to Justin Thomas in the playoff and he played so great, and he said, "I now know I'm one of the best players in the world." And yesterday firmly established that. And he's won at every level. So it was just a matter of time. But yes, there's no doubt those pressures, expectations. I think that was a feeling of relief yesterday that finally I could say I've got the trophy. He plays golf for trophies. He plays golf for his legacy. He plays golf for tradition. He dreamed of playing the PGA Tour. He dreamed of playing in you know, maybe not the FedEx because that wasn't when he was a kid, but you know, winning the FedEx, winning major championships. And so, look, you know, the FedEx, the money, all that is wonderful, but he plays to win trophies. And that's why he's such a special young man.
Josh, on that note, you told me back in the spring you guys are following a little bit of a Dustin Johnson model in terms of really tightening up his wedge game. And we saw him wedge it beautifully in the playoff on the 72nd hole. Kind of where are you in that process of creating a player who, like Dustin Johnson, wins every year on the PGA Tour?
Well, along with this, you know, full swing coach Troy Ditton, who's a close – we work closely together and a very dear friend of mine. And so we've just really stressed the wedge play. I mean, there's he's the best driver slash iron player in the world, and really his only deficiency has been his play from 140 yards and in. And if you look at what Dustin Johnson has done, that's why Dustin, you know, won over 20 times and has had the success he has, because he bought into what Butch Harmon told him, that, hey, if you want to be elite, there were two things. You need to cut it. You need to learn to cut the golf ball, and you need to become an elite wedge player. And once that really, it's already showing, it's already making a difference. But once he become the wedge play matches up with his mid irons, his long irons, his driving ability, he will not have a weakness. And like I say, the putting's only going to get better. We're just scratching the surface of how good this is going to be. And like I say, we can do drills, games, reps, trust drills, practice hours upon hours, and that's only going to change it so much. You ultimately get confidence from making putts like he did yesterday, making putts like he did at Southern Hills, making putts like he did at the U.S. Open in the match play. That's where the internal belief is going to help the commitment to that stroke get any better. I mean, we've made mistakes. Look, some of our worst weeks have when we've worked too hard. Right before the Byron Nelson was a great learning experience for both of us. And I made a mistake as a coach. We spent three straight days together, about 3 hours at a time, and we never did anything but putt. We didn't chip, we didn't wedge, we didn't do all the stuff we needed to do. And he went out and putted terribly at the Byron Nelson. And honestly, it was a blessing in disguise, because we realized we were just simply overworking, overtrying. And now we have about an hour and 15 minute plan for every single day. We do the same drills, the same blueprint, and we know it works. And we have great videos to always go back on when things get a little off.
Josh, when the team around Will, including you, set goals, how much of those goals are measured in, say, strokes gained metrics versus being measured in Will's outlook or attitude versus actual accomplishment on the golf course?
Boy, that's a great question. There's no doubt the result-based goals are to win golf tournaments, win majors, win the FedEx Cup, make the Ryder Cup, President's Cup, all those things. But he is such a stickler for a plan. He is the model student. He fits in with everything I believe in, which is day in and day out preparation, spending equal time in all areas of the game. And if you do that and we prepare as hard as we can, results are going to take care of themselves. So most of our goals are simply process goals. We know for a fact, we've done the analytics on it. We know when he becomes a top 50 putter in the world, which he's very close. If you counted all the majors, he's got a great chance to be the, you know, continues on the path with his ball striking. He's got an excellent chance to be the best player in the world. So that those are just facts and numbers that are quite obvious when you study them. So yeah, there's mostly process goals, but don't get me wrong. It's he likes trophies.
No doubt. First time PGA Tour winner, 26th birthday tomorrow for Will Zalatoris. Josh, we appreciate a few minutes. We'll speak to you down the road.
Sounds good. We're going to take him out to a nice dinner tonight and spoil him a little bit. He spoils up enough by letting him watch him play golf, so it's pretty special.
No, you all have earned it. Thanks so much, Josh. Enjoy it.
Thank you all for everything. Appreciate all the support.
All right. Back on Golf Today, Miguel Angel Jimenez is your champion at the Boeing Classic. The mechanic closed with a 5-under-67 to pick up his third victory of the season, finished two shots clear of David McKenzie, while Stephen Ames and Billy Andrade finished the week in a tie for third at 11 under par. Speaking of Andrade, you can watch Billy Andrade. He's the honored recipient of the 2022 Payne Stewart Award presented by Southern Company on Golf Channel Tuesday, August 23rd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. All right, folks, it is time now for the nine best shots of the past week, most impactful, memorable. Xander Schauffele, first round, St. Jude, par 3, 14th. This chip.
That's a good way to say par when you rinse the first one.
He's got a good walk, Xander Schauffele. He does. And so does this guy, Tony Finau, third round, par 5, third. In the bunker, he'll leave that a little bit short. So now this is fourth. Where'd he be now?
Well, he wasn't going for his third win in three starts for nothing, did he?
Yeah. And again, just the smooth, like unbothered, unhurried. Number 7, Troy Merritt, final round in Memphis, par 4, 12th. This is his second.
You've ever heard the term a little rabbit hop into the hole? That's what it is.
That's the rabbit hop.
You've never had a rabbit hop, Dan?
No. I've seen rabbits kind of in Connecticut. There are a lot of rabbits around the neighborhood, but not that one. That's a different rabbit hop. Number 6, Justin Thomas, final round, par 4, 18th. This third.
This is what separates the pros from us, Damon. Playing that aggressively back towards the water.
Immediately went on social media afterwards, said, hey, you got a little momentum. See you in Delaware for the BMW. Number 5, Denny McCarthy, second round. St. Jude, this is the par 4, 6th. His second shot. Now, we're already seeing a lot of hole outs. Can't see another one, can we?
We're used to seeing this guy's highlights on the greens, but yes, from the fairway. That's a pretty good one. An eagle.
Great putter, Denny McCarthy. Number 4, Adam Svensson. This is the first round in Memphis. Par 5, 16th, his third. These are good, man. These are really good highlights.
That was a low percentage play from back there, right?
Great shot. Another hole out for eagle. If the folks at home could see our shot sheets, they'd just say hole out for eagle, hole out for eagle. Number 3, Siwoo Kim, first round, par 4, his second.
This is starting to look like the skies above a national park, Damon. Yet another eagle.
Really, really cool. Siwoo Kim.
We need somebody on the grind.
These guys are, I mean, they're really good. We say it's a cliche, but now this is a trouble for Denny. Hit his drive into a cup holder.
That ball hit him and it's in his cup holder.
Look at this.
Well, at least it didn't land in someone's beer that he was enjoying.
That's a great point. He shoots, he scores. I mean, that hole, I think, is smaller than the hole on the green. So what's going to happen here? This shot, he's finding a way, and now you talked about his strength on the green.
This is Denny's gonna Denny.
Oh,
not for birdie.
The best in the business with the flat stick. Now, number 1, oh, this is just to make it in the playoff. Par putt. Star is born, baby. The Memphis crowd love it.
Oh. What will they say now? Well, they're going to say first of many for Will Zalatoris.
Absolutely wonderful moment. Time now for the 19th hole, Amory. Now, Tyson Alexander, one of the players who punched his ticket to the PGA Tour yesterday in Omaha, now able to cash in a long-ago bet.
There we go. All right, what's the story?
So in high school, we made a bet. I said, when you get your car, I'll get a tattoo, and it happened. So I'm glad to be here for it. I'm proud of him. I mean, I'm going to cry if I keep talking. Like, I'm pumped.
You can cry.
Let's go. I'm happy for him. Like, yeah, let's go. Let's go, Tyson.
I'm going to make you a promise here, Damon.
Yes.
If you win the B flight of your club tennis tournament,
yes,
I will make Paige get a tattoo of you. I think it's only fair that we honor the
You're not going to do it? You wouldn't do it?
I don't needles, Damon.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of tattoos on me. Other people can do what they want to do. My B flight final is coming up. I've been grinding more on the tennis court than on the golf course lately. It's very unusual for me. But how about the grind of these Korn Ferry Tour players, these 25 stories punching their ticket to the show?
And all hope is not left for the rest of them as well. We're just a few weeks away from the Corn Ferry Tour Finals. Another 25 guys are going to get their cards there. Yeah. All points reset. It's a three-tournament series, and they have a chance to write their own destiny.
It's a busy time in the game. We love busy. For Eamon, I'm Damon. Have a great Monday. Golf Central, 4 p.m. Eastern Time.